snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds.
Living 1949, brought to you each week by NBC and its affiliated stations, today examines the nation's largest nonprofit enterprise, the U.S. Post Office, as we send our documentary staff behind the postage stamp to keep you posted on
Uncle Sam at the doorbell.
Our narrator, postal address NBC 30 Rockefeller Plaza, New York 20, New York, Nelson Olmsted.
Greetings, postage stamp lickers, and yes, stockholders in one of the greatest new circulation agencies on Earth. For your post office, one of the world's largest employers, and one of the world's greatest service agencies, belongs to you. Yet most of us know little more about it than the time of day the mail's picked up in the little green box in the corner. Do you know, for example, as any postmaster can tell you,
today, the post office is performing more services for the American people than ever before, and performing them in spite of obstacles far more difficult than rain, sleet, snow, and gloom of night.
Do you know, for example, as any Washington reporter can tell you,
in recent months, an examining commission has brought many of these obstacles to light. A commission on the organization of the executive branch of the government, under the chairmanship of the distinguished elder statesman, our only living ex-president, the Honorable Herbert Hoover.
In another fortnight, on August 10, Mr. Hoover will be 75. As a birthday card to him then, and as an evidence of our own interest in one aspect of this, his most recent contribution to a great public career, let us case our post office, learn how it was born, how it grew, the services it performs today, and the troubles it faces in doing so. And lastly, and not the least, what Mr. Hoover and his official fact-finding group advises us to do about it. So, with our purpose stated, stamped, and sealed, we address to you, America, an open letter. Dear America, post office generally feeling fine and doing well. Hoover commissions come and gone, leaving behind some suggestions for Congress to think about if it wants our post office to stay on top as the finest postal organization in the world. But maybe you'd like to know how we got here in the first place. Well, as you may remember, postal operations are mentioned in the Bible, in the book of Esther.
And he wrote in the king Ahasuerus' name and sealed it with the king's ring, and sent letters by post on horseback, and riders on mules and dromedaries.
Talk about your pony express. In the Old Testament, it was camel express. Romans, Persians, Greeks, Chinese, all civilizations have had postal services of one kind or another. In Europe, in the Middle Ages, we find postal routes maintained by monarchs for monarchs. But not until the 17th century does friend John Q. Public get a break.
Hear ye, for the conveyance of private intelligence from person to person and point to point, we provide the services of a receiver, 3 clerks, 6 offices, and 100 messengers to collect and deliver letters. The fee, payable in advance, if you please, shall be 1 penny.
That was the famous penny post in England. Then, just over a century ago, in 1837, another Englishman put his 2 cents worth.
My name is Rowland Hill. I suggest that the government take over the postal service and defray the cost of the postal system by selling paper tokens, covered at the back with a glutinous wash.
And there, friends, with a lick and a promise, is Rowland Hill, the father of the postage stamp. In the young United States, The framers of the Constitution authorized Congress to establish post offices and post roads. The postal establishment began with 75 post offices and 1,800 miles of post roads in 1789. Listen to how it grew.
1819.
First mail by steamship.
1829.
Postmaster General given cabinet rank.
1836.
Post office reorganized into an independent establishment of the federal government.
1847.
The first adhesive postage stamp.
And then, in 1860, a postal event which lives in the memory of America as part of the color and tradition of the continent.
Our scene is St. Joe, Missouri. A young man straps two revolvers to his side and slings a mail pouch over his shoulder. He mounts a jet black horse. Steamboat, locomotives add their note to the cheering crowd as the young man wheels his mount and gallops toward California as someone cries,
"Good luck, Johnny!"
Across the continent, at Sacramento, the same scene. Flags wave, people cheer, and this time astride a white Bronco, another rider starts the mail for St. Joe as someone cries,
"Good luck, Harry!"
Thus do Johnny Frey and Harry Roth set out to jump the mail 1,900 miles from east to west. The Pony Express lost $400,000 to its stockholders in its brief lifetime. But as from horse to horse, rider to rider, station to station, day and night, they raced across prairie, desert, and mountain, they were, in the words of Donald Colros Petey,
two flying shuttles on the loom of the continent, weaving the fabric of the Union.
Yes, the boys of the Pony Express lived up to their motto.
The mail's got to go through.
...1863...
free delivery.
1873...
the first postcard.
1885...
special delivery.
1896...
RFD.
1911...
postal savings.
And in 1918...
government air mail.
The mail plane, surrounded by the President of the United States and numerous celebrants, almost fails to take off from Washington because
somebody forgot to fill my gas tank.
The rest, America, is recent history that most of you know. Day and night transcontinental airmail successfully established in 24. The zoning laws in 43. On to the present day, which finds
the U.S. Post Office Department, one of the largest operations in the world. Residents, 42,000 post offices the nation over. Population, 472,000 employees. Business, 32 billion letters and packages a year. Annual revenue, about $1.5 billion. Called
a delicate ear trump, wherein alike nations and families and isolated individuals whisper their joys and their sorrows, their convictions and their sympathies to all who listen for their coming.
Let's look now at this giant built with pennies and see what makes its heart tick. At the top, of course, is the Postmaster General. Then comes the First Assistant Postmaster General.
My department is charge of the 42,000 post offices.
The Second Assistant.
We direct movement of the mail.
Third Assistant.
My office handles financial operations.
Fourth Assistant.
Our job is supplies.
The present Postmaster General, Jesse Donaldson, rose from the ranks. But traditionally, the top jobs in the department have been dispensed as political plums. In fact, the Postmaster General has sometimes been called
patronage, Master General.
But the great majority of postal employees are working under civil service in what is called the field service. The field can be a post office, first, second, third, or fourth class, depending upon the revenue it takes in, anywhere, any size.
Here in New York City, our post office, you might say, is a little city in itself, with over 34,000 employees, our own fraternal clubs, Legion Post, Veterans Association, health insurance and pension plans, motor vehicles, mechanics, and garages.
Here in the Escondido, California, I handle the mail by myself in a room 8 foot square.
From A for Aaron, Kentucky, to Z for Zilks, Louisiana, the post offices range the land, their names veritably the song of America. And believe it or not, there's even one place where you can holler,
"Post office! Ahoy!"
and still make sense. For on the Detroit River sails
the T.F. Becker, the world's only floating post office, mates. A regular seagoing RFD delivering mail to 25,000 hereabouts who sail the ships of the Great Lakes.
And what will the post office, any post office, deliver for you?
Well, I'll tell you. We handle practically anything but poison, TNT, and animals. As for animals, there are a few exceptions. Day-old chicks, honeybees, bloodworms, chameleons, helgramites, horned toads, hydras, leeches, and baby alligators. Under certain conditions.
And how does this wide assortment of odds and ends that is the U.S. mail reach you? Last year, the government wrote checks to the mail-carrying airlines to the tune of $54.5 million. And every 24 hours, mail is carried over 600,000 miles in 9,000 trains. 93 out of every 100 pounds you send.
Most people seem to think, because we railway mail clerks carry guns, that we just sit here in the cars and guard the mail. But you see the rows of pigeonholes along the walls there? By the time we get to St. Louis tomorrow morning, those mail pouches will be empty and those pigeonholes will be full. We're what you might call postmen on wheels.
Add to mail by plane and train, mail by, yes, even in living 1949.
Get up, Dobbin. Get up now.
Mail by a horse and buggy. And believe it or not,
bust you, Husky! Bust!
We're still delivering mail by dog sled. But most important of all is the man who, day in and day out, moves by the power God gave him.
Morning, Mr. James.
Yeah, morning, Miss Leary.
Yes, the postman.
I've been a postman for 35 years, Mr. Armstead.
What? Tell us about it, Mr. Jenks.
Well, I get up every day at 5:15 in the morning, and I'm at the station by 6.
What happens if you don't get there?
Oh, but I do. If I'm as little as 6 minutes late, a substitute can take over, and I'd be penalized one demerit for every minute.
Then what?
Well, I spend the first hour getting the letters from my district from a special compartment and arranging them by street and by number. By 7 or 7:30 or thereabouts, I've got my pack on my shoulder and I'm on my way.
How much would you say your mail pack weighs?
Well, it starts out at about 40 pounds and pretty much stays that way because, well, with picking up the mail left in mailboxes along the way.
It's tough going, isn't it?
Huh. It used to be 50 pounds till a lot of the boys started coming down with hernia and heart trouble and the likes of that.
Well, does Uncle Sam furnish you with the uniform as well as that mail pack?
Oh, no, sir. I pay for this uniform myself. And I buy my own shoes. And I can't take them off my income tax either.
Well, how do you like your job?
I wouldn't have any other. I like meeting people and talking to them. A lot better than being cooped in, even if I do trudge 20 miles a day. Of course, a lot of people wouldn't think I get a very good rate for my mileage.
I know. There's been a lot of talk about your low salaries. And it must be hard on the feet.
I arrest them every chance I get. And, oh, right here, I want to say, I don't go for walks on my day off. And nobody shot at me because they thought I was a Confederate soldier.
Surely there must be some headaches. Some things you don't like about your job.
Oh, yes. Two of them, in fact.
What?
Dogs.
Uh-oh.
And Christmas.
The ordinary mailman. The man with a pack on his back. He's the one who usually starts your letter on its way, America. And in doing so, starts in motion the whole line of machinery and hundreds of hands that push it along to its receiver. But, of course, as with all things human, there comes an occasional headache.
Hello, Postmaster.
Mr. Postmaster.
Yes?
This is Judy Brown, 1565 Petunia Street.
Yes?
You've got to stop it. You've got to give it back to me.
Give what back to you, Miss Brown?
My letter. My letter.
Well, what letter, Miss Brown?
My letter to him.
Who, Miss Brown?
Tony Reynolds, 44 Beaver Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, but
you see, I do love him. I do. I was just mad when I wrote him breaking off everything. How'd I know he was coming to see me today with flowers and an engagement ring?
In all such cases, and there are plenty of them, the postmaster patiently does his best to find the letter among the thousands that pile into the post office daily. For mail is considered the property of the sender until it's delivered. Another typical problem.
Say, Joe.
Yeah?
Now, who do you suppose he wants us to send this letter to?
How's it addressed?
All they've written on the envelope is, I loved her in Casablanca.
Oh, don't you ever go to the movies, you dope? That's Ingrid Bergman.
Yes. Some people get a perverse kick out of playing guess who with the postal department. And there are other ways of being difficult.
Next, please. Next. Step up, please. There are lots of people waiting.
Oh, good morning. I know you're busy, but I'm a stamp collector. Could I have the center stamp from a block of that wonderful new commemorative issue on the suffragettes?
From January to December 48, 29 different such stamps were issued, mostly because of the requests of congressmen who find them helpful vote-getters. Such stamps have honored states and holidays, organizations like the firemen, individuals like Will Rogers, and otherwise generally unnoticed special occasions, such as...
The centennial of the American poultry industry.
While you're on the subject, why don't you tell people to learn how to spell? You know something? I've counted 197 different spellings of Chicago. And while you're at it, tell people to put the name of the state on their letters. There are 27 cities named Washington, 23 Lincolns, 14 Berlins, to say nothing of the Centervilles and Middletown.
Yes. Due to eccentric spelling and faulty addresses, each year millions of letters and packages find their way to the dead letter office. And thus it is that the U.S. Post Office is often forced to take to the auction block. And a voice of Uncle Sam rings out.
And now, folks, I have here a beautiful set of false teeth and a nice wooden leg. What am I bid?
Here, then, is your obedient servant, the Post Office, America. Not only mail carrier extraordinary, but...
the country's largest savings bank, largest express business, and largest agency for the transfer of money.
Few federal agencies can match the Post Office in devoted personnel, in stories of valor that come out of department after department, year upon year. Yet, because of the obstacles in its path, obstacles that hinder its more efficient operation... the Post Office finds itself today under more than one pair of critical eyes.
Why, look at the deficit, for goodness sake. While postal volume's grown, revenues haven't kept pace with expenditures. $263 million in the hole in 1947. And they probably expect a $500 million deficit this year.
Yeah.
If it can't make a profit like the British Post Office, at least it can be more self-sustaining.
Yeah. The trouble with the post office is, it, like Topsy, it just growed. Say, did you know that the last reorganization that affected postal management was in 1836?
Yeah. The U.S. Post Office has a date with a revolution.
One way to check the substance of all this is to go behind the scenes with the Hoover Commission. Let's consider, one by one, some items on the debit side of our post office.
Is that my cue?
If you're the spokesman.
Well, first let me make one thing clear. The findings of the commission imply no reflection on postal officials. They're dealing with problems and circumstances beyond their control.
Yes, but still...
the fact remains, the administrative structure of the post office department is muscle-bound. It is over-centralized and out of date.
Can you show us how?
I think so. Each and every one of the 42,000 postmasters, no matter where he's located, has to report directly to Washington and is responsible only to Washington and not to just one man in Washington. Depending on what he wants or what his business is, he may have to deal with...
First Assistant Postmaster General, Second Assistant Postmaster General, Third Assistant Postmaster General, Fourth Assistant Postmaster General, the Bureau of Accounts, Bureau of Chief Inspector, Office of Solicitor, Officer of the Purchasing Agent, Office of Budget and Administrative Planning, Chief Clerk and Director of Personnel.
Get the idea?
I'll admit it's confusing enough to me. But more important, what do businessmen say about it?
Well, what would happen to me in my branch office in Tulsa every time I wanted to turn around? I had to write and get permission from the home office 1,000 miles away.
The post office is a nationwide business with 42,000 branch offices. Top management ought to be represented in the field. Quickly, there ought to be top-level people nearby ready to deal on a day-to-day basis with local problems.
Is that what the Hoover Commission recommends?
We
recommend that the Postal Service should be decentralized into 15 regions under regional directors of posts and district superintendents.
That's clear enough. Anything else?
Yes. Outmoded laws, traditions, and regulations that freeze progress and stifle proper administration.
Can you give us an example?
Well, here comes one right now. Don't you recognize it? The familiar frightened green of a government paint job? Hey, wait!
Hi, pal. Want to know something about these government vehicles? My truck has been working for Uncle Sam since 1929. In fact, the average age of all our trucks is 15 and a half years. Even the new ones are nothing to brag about. Why? Because they have to be built according to specifications, see? And those specifications are so old and so outmoded, it's actually hard to get some of the materials you need to build them there not so long ago. So that some manufacturers don't even bother to bid for our business. Well, so long, bud. I got a date to see a bureaucrat about a crankshaft.
There are 900 pages of laws governing postal operations. A lot of them are as obsolete as the wooden mailboxes in the old trolley cars.
Okay, what's your recommendation?
We recommend that the laws, regulations, and other stipulations governing the service should be revised, not only to bring about structural changes, but also to simplify the whole operation.
Good enough. But didn't I hear something about losing an awful lot of money a little while ago?
Only about $500 million a year.
But why is that?
Because, my friend, you, as an American citizen, are trying to run a business in which you deny yourself the benefit of the first principle of good business operation. I mean, setting your price on a cost-plus basis.
Well, you mean some postal rates are too low?
Yes. Every kind of mail except first class loses money.
Even my old friend, the poor man's letter?
That's right. Even the penny postcard. In fact, every time you use a penny postcard, it costs Uncle Sam a cent and a half loss. Because each penny postcard costs 2.5 cents to make and deliver.
But doesn't the post office know this?
Of course it does. The trouble is that the rate setting for the postal services is largely done by Congress. And many other interests besides the needs of the post office influence congressmen in the rates that they decide upon.
Hmm. Well, what's your recommendation?
We therefore recommend that the Congress should authorize and instruct the Postmaster General to make rates charged for registered mail, insured mail, money orders, postal notes, postal cards, special delivery, etc., which would make each of these services self-supporting.
Of course, even setting the rates to make the department more self-sustaining wouldn't be easy.
Well, isn't it just simple arithmetic?
Not in the U.S. Postal Department. Not with its accounting system. Here, let me introduce you to a friend of mine.
I'm a CPA. Compared to private business, the accounting system of the U.S. Post Office is something to wonder at. Do you know, for instance, that the operation of the post office is paid for by some 58 separate appropriations, covering every phase of post office operation, from railway service to car fare and bicycle allowance? You know you can't transfer from one appropriation to another? But worst of all is that the main accounting for the post office is not done by the post office at all, but by the general accounting office, whose office is completely outside the postal establishment, and whom you have to address by writing General Accounting Office, Asheville, North Carolina.
Imagine running a business, any kind of business, with your main accounting office hundreds of miles away from the central office. Well, have I got you sufficiently confused?
No, I think I get the general idea. But what's your recommendation this time?
We recommend that the department should keep its own accounts and make its own disbursements subject to audit by the Comptroller General. Such a provision will bring the department into step with modern business methods.
At this moment, a bill which embodies some of these recommendations and many more by the Hoover Commission lies before a committee of the Congress. If the postal establishment merits the attention of Mr. Hoover, his associates, and your elected representatives, it certainly deserves your interest and mine as citizens, for the Post Office Department is our most intimate and continuing contact with our government. To the businessman and his customer.
Mom, take more. The catalog's out.
Our mail order catalog is more than a salesman between paperback covers. three generations, it's been a friend and welcome guest in 10 million American homes.
To the suffering, the ill.
Well, Doc, here's an airmail package I think you've been waiting for.
My serum. Thank God.
To the aged, the infirm.
Dear Emily, you don't know how much it meant to me to get a sweet letter written on her very own notepaper from my little grandniece. As I sit here in my favorite chair.
Well, here it is, right on the first of the month. My Social Security check. Right on time, yep. And a darn lucky thing for the government.
To the stamp collector.
Oh, boy. An upside-down 24-cent airmail issue. Yippee!
To our friends overseas.
Hey, look, Marie. Another janitor at the hotel, just like in the last package. It will be good of your cough. And a sugar, liver loaf, rice, milk powder. All a carlo must do is write our name on the outside, and it crosses the ocean to us.
To a diamond merchant.
But that stone must be worth a cool quarter of a million.
Conservatively.
Wait a minute. You mean you shipped it by ordinary mail?
That's right.
Of course, you insured it.
Best insurance in the world. A first-class U.S. stamp and a registry receipt. And finally, but far from the least.
And so, my dearest one, in saying goodnight, I know they're not like the real thing will be when we're together again. But they'll have to do for now. I mean this row of X's, the bottom of the page.
The U.S. Post Office. Messenger boy for lovers. Binder of the economy. Mouthpiece of democracy, and stamped by the hand and mind of all who use it, an avenue of understanding from you to all the world.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented by the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Hazem writes the scripts. Your narrator today was Nelson Olmsted. Music is composed and conducted by Roy Shield. This program is directed by Jack Puny. Our special thanks to the Citizens Committee for the Hoover Report for their cooperation. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to our drama document entitled 2 Weeks with Pay. Van Heflin and Margaret O'Brien are the stars making the phone calls on Hollywood Calling tonight. Perhaps they'll call you for your chance to win some of the wonderful prizes on Hollywood Calling. That's Van Heflin and Margaret O'Brien tonight. It's the quiz show with the exciting Film of Fortune jackpot tonight on NBC. Living 1949 came to you from our studios in Radio City, New York. Fred Collins speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.